Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, joins us every Monday, and we appreciate same, and he joins us again today. Guy, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good to talk to you.
Guy, lot going on. Just want to kind of get an update on a couple of issues. What is going on in and around the PPP program?
Well, several things. First, the program has not forgiven anybody's loan yet. So people can submit their forgiveness documents, and we would encourage them to do it. But the SBA has not forgiven any loans yet. They have 90 days to do it, which would, for the earliest submissions, would bring them to the end of October. But there's an expectation that the SBA is hoping they'll get a blanket forgiveness on small loans, where you just certify that you're good and those go through. And they're waiting to see if that goes through. The other thing is the SBA has some statutory authority that doesn't rely on anything happening in Congress. And that would allow them to let the government continue to pick up the PPP payments, which would take the pressure off on forgiveness. If the government's making all the payments, then delaying forgiveness for a while is a good thing, at least in their mind. And then the second part is they also could extend forgiveness on what are called affected industries. And when you look at the SBA portfolio, 25% of the SBA loans nationwide are to hotels. 10% are to restaurants. So that's a lot of affected industries. Then when you add healthcare, you know, clinics, people that are in long-term care, it balloons up further. So they're thinking about, and they may well, through administrative action, extend payments another 6 months for what are called affected industries, because otherwise those people would all have to make a payment November 5th. Sort of an awkward timing with elections coming up.
So what does that do for you guys? Because, I mean, obviously, y'all are carrying a lot of this, right, both administratively and otherwise. So how does this impact the local banks with this delay?
Well, it would actually be positive. Ironically, when we first started this, rates were just starting to fall, and we're really upset because the Treasury had the ability to pay rates as high as 4%. They settled on 1%, and we all complained because it seemed very low. Now, in a period of low loan demand and very low Treasury yields, like 0.1, 1% is not seeming so awful. So the banks are not under pressure to get rid of these loans, and the yield is fully guaranteed by the government, better than the alternative. Now, it's not a great yield. None of us are making a fortune on this, but it's better than nothing. So there's not really any pressure on us to want them to go away quickly, but we do want our customers to get their records in order because we don't want there to be a problem later. And there's always the danger of a change of administration and a new person wanting to prove that the prior person was bad by, you know, looking at things and reinterpreting rules. So to the extent that you can, we still encourage people, go ahead and get us the information so we can submit it for you and at least still be in the queue.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of angst and anxiety, knowing that the election is upon us in, 36 days, and, you know, you never know what's going to ultimately happen. Not to mention, if they decide to exercise their statutory authority, that would allow them to make the payments in lieu of the forgiveness for a period of time, you still have the administrative carry costs for these borrowers, who are many of whom are, they don't usually borrow money like this. So it puts a little bit of a burden on them.
Well, it would show up on their year-end financial statements as debt. So some of them may be reluctant to have that. But on the 7A side, if the payments are extended for the hotels and restaurants for another 6 months, where basically Uncle Sam makes your loan payment, that would be a wonderful thing, because those industries are still stressed and are still dealing with a lot of cash flow problems, because tourism obviously hasn't returned. If you want to go to Disney World, this is the time, because it's 25% occupancy, no wait, no lines.
Right.
But Disney doesn't make money at 25.
Yeah, yeah. Are we getting any new news out of Washington? Any thought process?
We are, and let me tell you, it was an interesting weekend talking to people on both sides. All the oxygen is being consumed by the Supreme Court, but it's a little different than what we thought. First, the lady that was nominated is from here. I don't know her personally, but I know people that do. She's been in their home, apparently just as nice as she can be, smart, capable, pretty incredible woman, first in her class, a mom with 7 kids, including 2 adopted. So a really nice person. They'll be hard to smear, although that doesn't stop groups from doing it, because when Kavanaugh was nominated, a reporter showed me a press release, and he said, I couldn't keep it, but it was from an interest group, and it said, Judge fill in name is extreme, too radical for America, Judge so-and-so, and went on to list other bad things. And I said, well, what judge is this? He said, that's the point. Whatever judge was nominated, they were going to say the same thing. So right. The debate is going to start, but the dynamics have shifted a bit. And so here's what we're hearing, which is a little bit intriguing. It's a fundraising bonanza for both sides. A little more for D than R, but still both of them always like to get more money. So they're both getting money. It makes, on the D side, the people playing serious politics are a little nervous for 2 reasons. One, the controversy over Supreme Court picks started when Robert Bork was nominated by Ronald Reagan. The chairman of the Judiciary Committee was Joe Biden. Most people who don't follow politics are totally unaware of that. And the fear on the D side is the image of Uncle Joe being the nice guy and the friendly person could be besmirched if people focus on his role in the Bork hearings. The left still thinks that was perfectly fine, but a lot of moderates think that was a little over the top. So there's a fear that if there's too much focus, it besmirches Joe's image. The other fear is if the attack point is on her religion, Catholics are swing voters in Arizona, in Pennsylvania, and some of the states where they want to win Senate races. So there's a fear that in a close race, they might tip the race the other way. So people are going to say, look, we object, go through pro forma objections, but their hope is that the more radical Democrats won't be so savage in questioning that they push moderate voters onto the R side. On the R side, they're seeing this as basically we're somewhat behind in the game in the fourth quarter. Time is running out. There's no advantage to kicking to the opposition. So they see nominating and going forward quickly as the only strategy that's left. You've got the ball. You got to try and score some points. Their hope is that she'll come across well, that the questioning by the other side will be pretty severe and will make her look rational and reasonable. So that is their hope. But they're also a little bit fearful that it energizes the other side. And that's the whole, which side is most energetic. So
right.
Both of them are wrestling with this issue. It's consuming a lot of time. But interestingly, it's almost like everyone's thrown in the towel and said, okay, we're going to wrap this up in a few weeks. Let's get it out of the way so we can move on. But it is stopping colleagues from working together, because Senator Cassidy had a bill with Democratic support that would have done the PPP forgiveness, would have provided some money to state and local governments, and was a pretty reasonable bill that in other times probably would have passed. But that's on the back burner right now because of the Supreme Court situation.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. They're not going to start until October 14th with the hearing with introductory statements. And, you know, it seems as though we lose another 2 weeks in anticipation of getting there. And it would be nice if they actually did some work on these, whether it's aid or whatever else, in the interim.
Well, and the interesting thing is a fair number of people on the Democratic side have said they're not going to meet with her. Well, if you're not meeting with her, you've already made up your mind, then you can work on other things. It's possible to do more than, you know, do two things at once. So move on and look at some areas to compromise. The other fear that I forgot to bring up is on the D side is that she may come across as a very nice mom, which she is, and suburban moms tilt heavily toward Biden right now. So there's a fear that this could tilt that a little bit the other direction. So it really is not as simple as everyone thought, and it's causing them to spend a lot of time caucusing and thinking and working on Supreme Court nominees and what it does to their race, as opposed to working on, well, what would be good for America? Because a renewed stimulus along the lines of the Cassidy bill makes a whole lot of sense, and as I say, in normal times would pass.
Yeah. Add to that the drama around three debates between now over the next 36 days.
Oh, yeah, because there's preparation, and then you have the run-up to the debate, and then you have the analysis after the debate, and then, you know, telling us what we actually saw during the debate, which is one of my favorite things that the Washington people do is tell you what you just saw. It's like, I was watching.
You got to love it. Guy, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Stay with us, folks. This is Newell on WWL. We'll be right back. We're back, and we're talking to Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, there's a Wall Street Journal report that says that employer identification numbers have passed 3.2 million this year as opposed to just 2.7 million in 2019. That number includes gig economy workers and others. And they say it's the most registrations since 2007. What can we read into that?
I think a lot of that is the gig workers, because the actual number of real small businesses that have employees has been declining for the last couple of years. So we're seeing people shifting out and becoming self-employed. Now, there are some sort of green shoots that we're seeing. We actually had a couple of customers buy restaurants over the last couple of weeks, and you think, why would you do that in this tough time? They're pretty optimistic that you know, we're closing in on the end of it, and we're seeing a recovery. So I think we're seeing a combination of some new small businesses starting, more gig workers and more people becoming self-employed and saying, well, I might as well do something. And there is a big surge of baby boomers that don't really want to retire. Some of them can't retire because of financial needs, and so they're going into the gig economy as well.
So obviously a good indicator for the short term. It'd be interesting to see where this ultimately plays itself out. Let's go to line one. Talk to Glenn. Glenn, you're on with Guy Williams.
Enjoying the show.
Thanks,
Guy. You made a statement that Cassidy's bill was being held up in the Senate, and my question. I already know the answer, but my question is for you. Can you tell me the name and the party of the Senate Majority Leader that decides if a bill gets a vote? Because if this bill was ready to go through, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, who's a Republican, would get it a vote. But you're saying that Democrats have stopped it, and they don't really have any power to control when a bill's voted, correct?
No, you're absolutely right. And let me clarify what I was trying to say. Cassidy has reached a compromise that works with some of his Democratic colleagues. Mitch McConnell, of course, is the one who controls the floor debate. On the House side, Nancy Pelosi said, we're not voting on it, we're not considering it. So Mitch is not proposing
the Senate could, the Senate could vote on it right now, but Mitch isn't putting it up for a vote, right?
Mitch is not putting it up for a vote until he can get until he can get something from the House side, because without that, you're really wasting your time.
Yeah. Well, the Democrat and you said something earlier also. You said the Democrats are refusing to meet with the judicial appointment that Trump put forward. Can you tell me the Republicans that met with Merrick Garland when he got nominated about a year before this woman did in a presidential cycle? How many Republicans wound up meeting with a guy that got nominated?
He would never got a hearing in the Senate, as you well know, so nobody met with him. And that's part of the tension. Each side is thinking, you know, this is what happened then. And that's one of the fears of the court stacking is imagine for a moment, okay, it's unfair. You got two nominees you didn't deserve. We'll add two to the court. Well, then when things switch around and you have a new Senate majority, then they add two more. And it's hard to reach an end. And it is a little nostalgic to look back when people got voted on with pretty solid majorities of both sides, but it has become a lot more polarized.
Yeah, I noticed, and you keep talking about the Democrats, and then when you talk about the Republicans, you say we and us and all that.
Well, so, actually, that's if I've said that, that's incorrect. I don't like to talk about my political affiliation, but I'm actually on the D side, and I'm a Democratic political appointee at this moment. So I could never say we as a Republican because I've never been a Republican. But I do try and keep good relations with both sides.
And I can confirm that, Glenn. And, you know, I've always found Guy to be a very interesting person because of it. Although you might be one of those Democrats that hardly exist anymore, Guy.
It's funny because when I go to Washington as a banker, they do not presume that there are many bank presidents that are still Democrats.
Democrat, right. Exactly. Well, but I mean, you know, the things that you bring up are true. And this is where, you know, and I don't want to get into this with you about it, but this is the thing about Merrick Garland. This could be resolved legislatively. And if a president nominates, there must be a hearing. I think in many people's minds, when Merrick Garland's nomination came up, the Senate had decided we're not going to approve this guy. So why go through a hearing?
Yeah, and I think
it's a waste of everybody's time because we don't have the votes. They don't have the votes to approve him. We're going to hold fast. We're not approving the guy. So then they're going to come with another name in a period of time after that. And, you know, I just at some point in time, I think they need to pass the rules. Either you're going to compel hearings to be had, vote up and down, and then you start the process all over. And if it's the delay game you're playing to get to the end of somebody's term, that's just the game you're going to play. When we start hurling this word hypocrisy around, there's plenty of that to go around because there's no doubt in my mind if these were the Democrats that controlled the Senate and the White House, it wouldn't be any different. They would be moving forward with a nomination. Plain and simple.
Well, and Newell, one of the things I try and identify when I'm talking over the weekend with folks is what each side is seeing, and that's what I'm trying to identify is the viewpoints and the political calculus. And the intriguing thing is these are political professionals that have done this their whole life, but they're not always right. Yeah. So thinking, okay, this is going to help my side, and it turns out it helps the other side. I do wish we were a little closer to the Eisenhower era where, you know, both candidates were closer to the middle. You know, we've gotten a bit more polarized than I wish on both sides. And there aren't many moderates left. President Clinton wouldn't get reelected today because he couldn't get the Democratic nominee because he wouldn't be left enough.
Yeah. And, so, and how about Ruth Bader Ginsburg herself saying she doesn't think she could get the confirmed today because she's not far enough left.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, she got a substantial number of Republican votes, and sure. You know, in the old days, it was is the person qualified? And if they weren't qualified, you voted for them. And once again, that's a little bit of the fear. The hyperpartisanism started with the Bork hearings because he was clearly qualified, but Ted Kennedy and Joe Biden made that very political. So one of the things my friends on the D side want is to not revisit that issue because it does tend to besmirch the Uncle Joe nice image.
Sure. And what goes around comes around in D.C. I don't always agree with it, but that's just that human nature. Let's go to Jerry on line two. Jerry's got a question for you. Jerry, you're on with Guy Williams.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Jerry.
Yes, I had applied for the frontline disaster pay, the $250, but I haven't received it yet. I just want to know was it on the way or what.
That was the $250 that the state had for frontline workers.
Right, right.
Yeah, I would check into it because most people have already received that.
Oh, okay. Well, I have to check in with a job or what?
Yep.
Oh, okay then. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry you didn't get it, but yeah, most of our customers that applied already did receive that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Best of luck, Jerry.
All right.
Unfortunately, for many, Guy, they really need to stay the course in order to get it.
Well, they do, and one of the things that I regret is, and I mean, once again, I know it sounds like I'm touting the Cassidy bill. I just happen to like what's in it. But one of the things that's in it is another direct payment to everybody. It's like if you need to stimulate the economy, just send everybody a check. Because when the crisis occurred and both sides worked together, there was about a $2 trillion shrinkage in the economy. But the Fed and the House and Senate together filled it back up with $2 trillion of both monetary easing and PPP loans, and it worked pretty well. It kept us from going into a Great Depression. And I do wish we could get back to that because there is a need for a little more stimulus, and then hopefully next year we have a vaccine and we get our economy back on track. Because we're, as I say, we are seeing some positive signs, but getting through flu season and getting a vaccine will matter. Newell, we have time. We got some state and local issues to talk about, too.
Let's do it. Main Street Lending, where does that stand?
Oh, man. We have approved four loans, and apparently that makes us one of the outliers in approving a lot of loans. It has not been a popular program. It's very difficult because of the underwriting rules. So the Federal Reserve set it up as a liquidity facility, no payments the first year, interest only the second year, and then you pay it back P&I, the last few. So you have to be underwritten to have good income beforehand, and that's certainly reasonable. But then you also have to sell 95% of the loan to the Federal Reserve. So you do all the work, and we're entertaining loans up to $50 million. But if we make a $50 million loan, which would be a very, very large loan for our bank, we only keep $2.5 million. Mm-hmm. So you do a lot of work for a small amount. And when you get down to a more reasonable loan amounts, you know, $5 million, $2 million, suddenly the amount that you're keeping becomes very small. So a $2 million loan, you're only keeping $100,000. And so you do a lot of work, have a lot of liability to the Fed to get it just right, for only $100,000. Now, we're still going to process and we're still going to do it, but it hasn't been very attractive. And the Fed is looking at revising the rules, but we have no idea where that is because Mnuchin has not been talking to the banking groups. It's interesting. He talks to Pelosi, he talks to the president, but he's not really much in the way of talking to the industry groups that are actually involved in the lending.
It's, you know, that's a shame, because it was a program that could have helped in a big way had they just fine-tuned just a couple of little things, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm still optimistic that they're going to make some changes. They just need to get focused on it. I think one of the problems is he is a Wall Street guy, so he comes from the perspective of very big lending, And so it's hard for him to think about the impact on community banks. Right. And but the community banks are the ones that made the PPP loans and stepped up for the customers. And, you know, the largest companies don't tend to be that vulnerable. They have alternate sources of capital. It's every day. It's all the mom and pops that need our help.
Sure.
And so absolutely. I think he needs to talk a little more to the industry groups, a little more to people that are involved with the smaller businesses.
Let's go to the talk lines. We have Wayne has a question for you, Guy. Wayne, you're on with Guy Williams.
Good morning. How y'all doing, guys?
Good.
Yeah, I want to know why you're giving grant money to a company that's going out of business, and the employees collecting unemployment already, but the company is going out of business, but you're giving $10,000 grants to people that's going out of business. Oh, why are they doing that?
Okay, I think you're probably talking about the SBA EIDL program. That is a program that is run entirely by the Small Business Administration, and I'm going to tout the bank's record a little bit here. You know, we've talked about the PPP fraud, and we've got a little interesting news on that I'll talk about later. But the fraud in the EIDL program is gigantic. I mean, we had five different congressional districts on the south side of Chicago where something like 4 to 5 times the number of businesses that actually existed were approved for EIDL loans. So the SBA was not set up to handle something in that of that volume, that magnitude. Their directive was just get the money out, accept the people's statements. And there was an awful lot of fraud in that program, significantly more than PPP, which is actually run by banks. Our best numbers now is probably less than 1% fraud on the PPP and probably, you know, 10 to 15 on the EIDL program. So why they did what they did, they thought it was the right thing. They thought that getting the money out was very important. But I hate to say we didn't do it, but in this case, I'm glad to say we didn't do it. That we had nothing to do with putting that out. So your question's a good question. I think the taxpayers and the SBA now wish that they hadn't, but, you know, that was their directive at the time.
Yeah, it's a shame that a few people take advantage of the system and screw the whole thing up for everybody else. Where are we with mainstream lending at the state level? It seems to be there may be a little bit of a bone of contention with this special session as to try and redirect what's left there.
Yeah, that program was another well-intended program, but it turned out to be, you know, we have a history, Newell, and you and I have been here a long time of messing things up in Louisiana and tending to get a bad reputation nationally. Now, the good thing is, you know, whether you've liked or disliked our last few governors, none of them have gone to jail. And, you know, you don't have to think they did a great job, but they're not dishonest. John Bell is not a dishonest guy. Bobby Jindal made some mistakes, but he didn't steal any money. You know, Mike Foster didn't. So we're in an era of more honesty, more transparency, but there's always that fear that we'll go back the other way. So I think the program was a little more complex than it needed to be. It wasn't received as well as it could have been. And so there's money left over. The legislature has done something unusual. They called themselves into special session. The governor is not going to address the session because he didn't call it. And they're looking at some things about his emergency authority. They're doing very important things. One is unemployment insurance. We have a law on the books that will cause Louisiana unemployment benefits to drop and employer contributions to go up significantly because we've essentially depleted the fund. Well, that's very important. We need to address that. And I think both sides of the aisle will agree on that. We just can't allow unemployment insurance to drop while we still have high levels of unemployment. And this is not the time when you want to charge the employers that are hiring an even higher premium and make it very difficult because we have a lot of folks that are hanging on by their fingernails. So the special session's important. I think they will address the Louisiana program and make it a little more user-friendly. And I'm very certain that they will address the unemployment issue because that's just too important to ignore.
Yeah. All right, we got to get to another break, Guy. When we come back, we'll talk about the other programs and your fraud report, which we always love to hear. When we return, Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back after the break. We're back with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, taking your calls. Let's go to Ronnie. You're on with Guy Williams. Ronnie.
Yes, sir. Yes, it's about PPP program. We have two businesses, and in May, I did application for each one of them and received my funds and did everything I'm supposed to do, but I'm still waiting. The bank I went through is saying they're waiting on a decision from the government about if there's going to be forgiveness before I even let their customers fill out the forgiveness letter.
Yeah, they're probably trying to simplify their lives because there is a movement, and once again, supported on both sides of the aisle, to streamline forgiveness for smaller loan amounts, either $250 or $150. The government has not forgiven any loans yet, so yeah. you're not missing the boat yet, but it's up to each individual bank. The bank will have 60 days once you complete the forms to put it to the SBA, and then the SBA will have 90 days, and both of them are sort of sitting on it right now and waiting. The other thing that complicates it, hold on one second, they're also thinking about a second round because there's $130 billion left, and the one thing that can never last in Washington, D.C. is leftover money. So there's money set aside, approved by both sides, signed by the president, but unspent because the deadline passed. So there's also some thought that if businesses were affected, can show that they had a reduction in revenue, they might get a second bite at the apple. So it's possible they're waiting on that as well.
Okay.
And I didn't mean to interrupt.
But that's okay. What I'm worried about is that aren't they giving you 20 or 24 weeks to have this done by? So if I don't have my letter in time, how is that going to affect me?
You're okay for now because, once again, they are not – SBA has not forgiven anybody's loan. And they're not really actively pushing the portal and encouraging us to submit loans. You know, we're accumulating the information, but you're not running up against a deadline right now.
Okay.
And the likelihood is – within the next 2 weeks, SBA is going to extend that, and they can do it administratively. So I would put that at like a 60-40 positive that they're going to extend the time period.
Okay.
So stay tuned because we'll let you know as soon as we know.
I was getting a little antsy.
Not a problem. All right, Ronnie, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. What is the fraud update?
All right. So we had a group in Chicago that was actually processing by the thousands and processed more loans than they had businesses, got a lot of idle money, and apparently the SBA didn't have a checking system for how to do it. Well, somebody in Louisiana saw that and said, well, if they can do it, I can. So we had a bookkeeper in Belle Chasse, did six loans. It's like, come on, this is embarrassing. They did tens of thousands in Chicago and got money. You did six after the word came out. And, of course, as soon as the applications came in, it was pretty obvious they were fraudulent. So the poor guy that tried to do six in Belle Chasse is under indictment, just as the ones are that did the 10,000 up in Chicago. The box score right now on vehicles is two Lamborghinis, two Rolls Royces, a couple of yachts, lots and lots of jewelry, and one poor guy that didn't get the memo that bought a Kia. So that's going to be a little embarrassing if he shares a cell with the Lamborghini and Rolls Royce guy.
You know, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, it's just like, and we're seeing it a lot too with these social justice organizations getting hundreds and thousands and millions of dollars. There was some guy, and they say he's loosely connected with BLM. I don't know that that's a fact as of yet. They just arrested him or indicted him on $200,000 worth of clothing and jewelry and parties and everything else. So obviously, when you're giving money, make sure you're giving it to the right place, because obviously it will be abused. As always, Guy Williams, we truly appreciate your time. And your insight, and we'll be checking in again next week, because a lot of things I think are going to be changing this week for sure.
Oh, they will. Good to be with you.
All righty. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.